When Robert Luggie Jr. and Carl Charlie died in the Burns Lake Mill explosion of 2012, they may have been the latest victims of poor fire standards on First Nations lands. People are 10 times more likely to die in a fire if they are living on First Nations land in Canada or working. It's something Blaine Wiggins is trying to change. He's executive director of the Aboriginal Firefighters Association of Canada, and he joins me on the line this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. But curious to know why people living on First Nations territory are 10 times more likely to die in a fire than anywhere else in Canada. Why is that?
Well, at first, the statistics are about 12 to 15 years old. We don't actually have current statistics that would identify what the risk factors are in comparison to living off reserve. But we do know just through ad hoc monitoring and fire deaths that they still are higher in proportion. But the reason why, basically, is that on reserve, you have a lack of governance structures, legislation, that mandates and requires processes that would lead to better fire safety and life safety aspects. Off reserve, we have provincial legislation that requires building codes, require fire codes. And that's basically the premise of what we've been working on to get comparable levels of legislation on reserve.
Now, I want to bring this to the mill explosion in 2012. You provided background for the coroner's inquest into this event. What sort of information were they looking for?
Again, it's not a lot of people are aware of the difference or the lack of a structure on reserve. And that's actually one of the things that we brought awareness to the coroner service, that basic things like standard fire inspections, whether they be in publicly occupied spaces such as community halls or industrial spaces where private companies would operate, there's a much different structure off reserve that happens, a mandated structure that's required that isn't necessarily engaged on reserve, again, because of the lack of compliance. And that's another piece of the governance and the legislation. You actually, not only do you have to do it, but there's compliance levels you have to address, and there's legislation should you not address those.
Okay, but who is implementing that legislation or making sure that there are fire inspections happening?
On reserve, nobody.
Why is that?
Again, no legislation that requires it. So if nobody's forced to do it, generally speaking, unless you have a very proactive community, and I'm actually just in Toronto this morning, and later today I'll be in Rama, and there's a First Nations Fire Department, as an example, that has a required annual inspection of both private homes and public facilities and commercial enterprises. They do a once-a-year fire inspection. And again, another example of that in British Columbia is Tecumseh, near Kamloops, Kamloops Indian Band, formerly known. They have a contract with the Kamloops Fire Department. So they, again, go through and they maintain the same level of standards that would be found officers. And this is just it's not very common that we see this level of fire protection and fire life safety.
Yeah, it's interesting that in the context of Canada, you can name two places where there are standardized fire inspections. What needs to change to make this happen in every First Nations area?
We really do need everything, and this is one thing we've been studying for several years, and about 5 years ago we came up with the conclusion that we can change a lot of things, and we can educate, but until we see standardized and equivalent building and fire codes on reserve, we really won't get that engagement. And again, it's just like a lot of things that municipalities, if they're not required to do it, generally speaking, very few will do it. There's funding pressures on every community, whether it be First Nations or non-First Nations. And for them, for a governance body to pick something on, they either have to have a very, very vibrant local economy and a really good taxation base, which a lot of First Nations don't. So hence, that's really where the challenge is. And we certainly agree that funding is a big part of it, but until we know exactly what we're funding, it's hard to get communities to engage, and it's hard to make a case for that additional funding to the federal government.
because in the meantime, there are people whose lives have been lost and entire communities who are at risk. How necessary is this to make those changes or get that funding quickly?
It's extremely necessary. But again, like you say, until we get that structure that, you know, and this structure for fire protection has evolved off reserve over, it wasn't just, you know, 10 years ago that, it wasn't just 10 years ago that, you know, these things started. It was, you know, over the last 50, 60 years, the evolution of fire protection, fire standards, working with the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, engagement of guidelines and standards that were adopted. So it's been an ongoing process, and there really is fire science around prevention of fires, and that's one of the things. Again, without that entire structure, we will continue to struggle.
And where do the changes need to start? Do they need to start at the federal level with funding, or do they need to start at the local level where there's more of a cry for the money and for the training?
They need to start at the federal level. We actually need, at the end of the day, we need the legislation. Without the legislation, nothing will happen. And it's the federal government that requires that. They're the only person, they're the only body that can, at the end of the day, mandate this and change this.
Blaine Wiggins, good to speak with you today.
No worries. Thank you very much.